You heard it right here, right now from the beat.
The new ivory is mammoth.
What do you guys want to know? I've done way too much research on dinosaurs.
Almost a larger than life figure.
No reason at all to think it was made by aliens.
Drop down and go swimming as fast as you can. Out of whale.
All these big giants, give me a kiss and tell me they don't.
The crowd, just the pop, the loudness, the excitement, the electricity.
I don't know if I can take your little Canadian destroyer.
The future is scary, but it's also wonderful.
Lunchtime in London, around midnight in Tokyo, breakfast time in Sao Paulo, in a small town of Nikšić, Montenegro, in the European part of Mediterranean, just the right time to kick off the fifth season of the Unscriptify podcast. Welcome back to the podcast where genuine meets uncensored, and all of that powered by Jägermeister. In today's episode, we have a special guest, a guest who is an actor, author, restaurateur, mobster. His story is about Frank Sinatra, Frank Costello, Marilyn Monroe, Joe Colombo, marked a life worth living, and the list goes on. And those stories have captivated the attention and the interest of millions around the world. Mr. Gianni Russo. Sorry for that.
Who are you?
Gianni, are you ready to go? Genuine, uncensored, and unscripted with us today.
I'm great, man.
Can we start with your origin story? From small Italy to big screen to Godfather. How little Johnny was shaped in New York City?
Well, I was blessed for one reason. I unbeknownst to me at a young age, I didn't realize my family, Angela Russo in Sicily, was one of the major bosses, a two-piece couple. So with that, there was a lot of honors given to me unbeknownst that I didn't need to earn just because of the family name. And the one guy that really was impressed with me was Carlo Gambino at the age of 12 years old. And he was one of the boss of one of the five families in New York. And I don't want to shock your audience, but at 12 years old, I was attacked by a pedophile and I killed him. So this gave me accolades in the neighborhood, like, you know, the apple didn't fall far from the tree because I didn't realize my cousins in Italy were known for that.
Yeah.
Were your mother and father born in Italy? Are you first American?
No.
Or?
No, I'm second. My grandparents came from Sicily and my grandmother came from Naples, actually. And they were both Russos, which was so confusing because she's a Russo from Naples and he's a Russo from Sicily. And it wasn't for years later that my grandfather came clean and said, no, we're really Sicilian, because in the early 1900s, coming from Sicily, everybody was afraid of them. So they'd go to Naples and come in and more accepted.
Yeah, but is that true that in... you know, that famous quote in Goodfellas that in order to be made, they had to track your family through both mother and father to back to the old country. Is that true?
Oh, no. Yeah, it was definitely that. And that's why even like a guy like John Gotti broke all the rules when he made his son John into the mob because his mother was Jewish. The whole place, the whole thing fell apart after that anyway. So,
But did your family, your parents and you yourself had many connections to Angelo Russo? He was already dead when you were born, right?
No, my uncle was hung, my great uncle, in 1947, because they were all cleaning up La Cosa Nostra in Sicily. They left him hanging in the street as a symbol of fear for these other people, because that's when, you know, they were having all kinds of problems and they were trying to get rid of the organized crime. They didn't do a good job, unfortunately, but he got killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what was, obviously you grew up in the 50s and 60s, your kind of childhood and adolescence. Was the mob part of really of daily life in those neighborhoods in a sense? Were the regular people just influenced by it?
Well, at that time, I mean, thank God for the mob, because early on when the Italian immigrants originally came here, they were taken advantage of. They were like on the list of everything. And the mob basically got us the respect I mean, then it got out of control, but originally that's the reason they came over. Carlo Gambino came over at the age of 17 as a made man out of Sicily to get rid of the Moderanos and the other groups that we hear. The Italians were being fleeced by these guys, little immigrants, shaking them down, store owners and that. And that's where they did it for a good reason at that time. And then it got into control.
Mm-hmm. Let me get back to that. Your first skill when you with the pedophile, was that maybe let's call it initiation into these mobster circles, or were you already into that world?
No, I wasn't into that world. But normally, to get in, that is initiation. You have mm-hmm. to kill somebody. They wanted that was the true to get into La Cosa Nostra. You had to kill. So that they had something on you, because once they brought you in, you knew all their secrets. But that's not why I did it. I did it because the guy was attacking me, and they misread it and felt that, you know. But, I mean, I'd capitalized on it. I'm writing a new book now called Mafia Secrets that is all about that, because during the 60s, especially during the 60s, I met every mob boss in the world. Because when Joe Kennedy wanted his son to become president of the United States, he was partners with Costello during Prohibition, and they amassed $30 million each at that time, which is equivalent to $1 billion today. And when he came to them, the only reason they went along with it, because the first thing John would do if he became president at that time, they were going to invade Cuba, get rid of Castro, and give them all the casinos back. Because when Fidel Castro threw Batista out, they took over the casinos, and everybody lost all that money. So that's why they went along with it. But as we know, John made the decision to make his brother Bobby attorney general, and he went after the mob. And that's why they went after them, unfortunately. I like John F. Kennedy. That really bothered me.
Everybody does.
Yeah, I mean, he was a great guy. I mean, it's a shame that
know, American who doesn't speak positively about him.
No, I mean, he was a great... I had the privilege of 6 months prior to him getting nominated. I spent almost every weekend with them, all in Las Vegas.
You did?
Oh, no. I was Costello's eyes and ears. Because after the Appalachian fiasco, he would go nowhere. So... that's what he was grooming me for, unbeknownst to me. And then at 16 or 17 years of age, I find myself at the Sands Hotel sitting ringside watching the Rat Pack perform every Friday and Saturday night, 2 shows a night, which was great for me, but not realizing, you know, what this was all about. And then I'd report to him every Monday what I saw over the weekend.
Yeah, but... obviously now you mentioned a person like Kennedy who and you had interactions I know with many celebrities and famous people of that time, many which I want to ask you about, but one in particular I heard you speaking. Now I don't remember that you spent a lot of time with Don Rickles, if I'm correct.
Oh, I love Don Rickles. That was later on.
What was the Don the same personality, like he was on stage busting balls, everybody, nobody was off the...
It was amazing how he was brought into the Klan with them, because he started calling Sinatra the skinny guinea.
Yeah, I mean, he was the only guy in public to bust him about mob ties.
Oh, I know. And everybody thought it was humorous and they, you know, he was making a lot of money for everybody. See, but then when you get down to the ground rules for the mafia, if you're making money for them, they'll let you go do a lot of things. And when Sinatra okayed, you know, he's funny, they brought him into the fold. See, what people don't realize, the mob controlled every nightclub, every casino where they worked. So they needed them as much as they, you know, the mob wanted them to be successful and funny because they're back in the showrooms And they always get down to money. My reputation with them, my knowledge, I found that out at an early age, fortunately. I was never made. Everybody thinks I'm a made guy. I'm this. They kept me clean for their selfish reasons, because they needed me to get all my licenses and all of that. And I did, once I found out how they really were, they'll betray you in a minute. I mean, they'll be kissing you one second and sticking a knife in you the next. Wow. Once you betray them, I mean, that's the problem with it. And that's why, you know, once they started this RICO thing and everybody started flipping, because they knew, you know, if you deal in drugs, you're going to get killed. If you did something against the family, you're going to get killed. So when the FBI or somebody came to them, that's why they started flipping, and that's what destroyed the mob as we know it.
Yeah, I read that Scorsese actually, he planned for Sinatra movie, but that the Sinatra estate opposed it, allegedly. I'm not sure of this, because Scorsese also wanted to portray the mob ties in a part of the movie, but they were like, no, we don't, none of that in his biopic.
Yeah, well, that's why Scorsese, I mean, is a genius. But yeah, when you try to touch Sinatra, it's not going to happen. And the kids know the father was very well connected, and they're still living off the accolades of their father. I mean, even though he married Barbara, which I can't understand, she was forget about it. This was like a streetwalker, and now she's Barbara Sinatra. Forget about it. I mean, I know her so well. That's why she hated me, because I knew her past, and I didn't mind telling people.
Yeah, but not minding telling people stuff can be pretty tough, especially if you are talking about mafia, about Cosa Nostra, the world you were living in. How tough is to speak about your life stories, about connections and everything that happened in the 70s, 80s, and earlier? Do you get threats even today, or are you comfortable with it?
I'm so comfortable because I'm still with the top people. I got respect from 90-year-olds. I go to Sicily now every 90 days. I walk the streets. They love me for one reason. I make money for them. Once I stop making money, who knows? But right now, I make a lot of money. I mean, it's a crazy affiliation that I have, but I've earned my respect. And they realized nobody, including Carlo Gambino, Frank Costello, Tony Accardo out of Chicago, the Savellas, I can name every major family in America, wanted me in the mob. Because I was the messenger that was clean. We moved $600 million out of casinos in Vegas and brought it to Sicily through the Vatican Bank.
What was it? Was
Vatican Bank?
What?
Bank of Vatican.
The Vatican Bank.
How did you do it?
We just brought it on airplanes. Bring $3 or $4 million a week in cash.
No thanks.
And that was the whole thing. So they were about to disrupt that. I did that for 15 years. The numbers, the IRS always questions me and saying, well, we know you moved $60 million, $600 million. I said, well, where is this money you keep talking about? And the reason we use the Vatican, if you think about it, you can never subpoena the Vatican. They're their own country. How are you going to knock on the door and want to subpoena and see your records? Get out of here.
Yeah. Is Pope there? Can I talk to him for a second?
Yeah, please. Yeah. And that's why I came up with that idea. That was my idea. So they thought that was genius. So what I've done in my life, you know, and obviously I've been brought to trial on 3 other murders, but they were all self-defense. When I killed Pablo Escobar's guy, Lorenzo Morales, he already slit my throat. So I could kill him anywhere. And I did. I killed him in front of 150 people. Mm-hmm. See, one thing about Sicily and being Sicilian, we never ran to cops. We just handled it ourselves. If a burglar came to my house and robbed me, you'd never see him again. He'd be in my bathtub with a bathtub of 5 gallons of lye. He'd be coming down the drain in 4 days. See you later.
You know, to hear this thing, you know, obviously in America, you can very easily get illegally the weapons. I mean, the arms and that.
Yeah.
But here, a lot of people have them. I mean, a lot of households have weapons, but none of those are illegal. They are from the war and things like that. So if somebody finds your weapon, you're fucked.
I understand. It's not fair because, like you're saying, there's young kids hitting people like my age, sucker punching them on the street and robbing them, and you can't do nothing about it. You know what I do at night here sometimes? I put on a full-length chinchilla coat, put a shotgun up my sleeve, and I take a walk. I want one of these guys to attack me. Forget about it. No, this is it's bullshit.
Yeah. I have to ask you, obviously, we mentioned, again, many, many important names and all that, but on Godfather, I bet you were asked a million times this, but I have to ask this because Brando, he is kind of a character that had many interpretations by many different people, and you know, his attitude was questioned, his work ethic on movies, things like that. But I consider him one of the greatest actors of all time. What's your assessment of Brando as not just an actor, but as a person, your interactions with him?
Well, you know, I've got very close to Brando. I have a house on Mulholland Drive in California. I was his neighbor for a long time. And when his son, Brandon, shot his sister's boyfriend and killed him, I got that all straightened out with Robert Shapiro. The kid only got 5 years, and then he got out in 38 months, and he committed suicide. I'm saying, what the hell we do this for? Well, Brando's a unique guy. I mean, I stayed friends with him until he died. But, you know, he's a kinky guy, very strange. Sometimes you go to his house, he's dressed as a woman. Him and Michael Jackson, Elizabeth Taylor. Oh, no, he was totally off the wall. That was the creativeness about it. You know, he was a very creative guy.
Yeah, I heard that he was a prankster. I read many stories that he was like a prankster on sets and things like that.
Oh, yeah. A lot of those guys are. You know, when you're there 13, 14 hours a day, you have to do something. And when you're Brenda, you can do anything you want. You know, Sinatra was a prankster too. But, you know, it's a lot of those guys, they get bored. It's crazy because, you know, and that's the fortunate part, you know, that I hit the streets at 12 and a half years of age. Costello took me under his ring when I was 14. I was with Costello until 73 when he died. And I have another book I'm doing after this called The Son He Never Had, because him and Loretta never had children. But this guy protected me. You see this house I'm sitting in? If you see behind me, where can I go? That dining room sits 16 people. I'm in a 12-room apartment in Midtown, New York. He gave it to me.
Wow.
That's cool. Yeah, but you were close, as he's saying, with Joe Colombo, and he was a big player when Godfather, we are speaking about right now, was being made. And if they didn't have Joe's blessing, let's say, back then, they wouldn't have to feel they wouldn't have the chance to film it in New York, right?
Oh no,
that was whole war.
I was instrumental in that because he was picketing the FBI building at the time. He created a thing called the Italian Defamation League after the movie came out. But people don't know behind the scenes, his son was arrested, and that's what that was all about. It was all personal. So I flew in when I heard what he was doing. And I met Joe many times. And in fact, his family, the Colombo family, was originally the Pafacci family. And he turned on the Pafaccis, Joe Pafacci, who that's where the oil business came in. He turned on the Pafaccis, went to Gambino and told him that they were going to assassinate him. Anastasia and Pafacci were going to try to kill Gambino.
Whom you played in the movie, Anastasia. You played Anastasia in the movie, am I correct?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, lefty.
And Tony, Albert's brother, Tony, confirmed me for my confirmation. Just talk about a small world. He's really
That's
my
an underrated film.
Yeah, I mean, you spoke about front doors of Paramount Studios being blown up by Joe Colombo. That's right?
Yeah, the gates.
Yeah.
They're trying to send a message. That's why I flew to New York right after that. I said, Joe, I went to his club on 86th Street. I said, Joe, there's an opportunity here. We can make a lot of money. And he looked at me, he said, we? I said, yeah, if I'm going to do this, I want a piece of it. He started laughing. Because, you know, I'm in my 20s at that time. But my ego, I always wanted to be an actor. Everybody used to see me on the street and say, you're a good guy. You should become an actor. But I wasn't going to go through all those trials and tribulations. So
yeah,
I gave him my plan. And at the time, he just hired a lawyer called Barry Schlotnick. And thank God he was a Jewish lawyer because he had to go talk to all the Jews at the studio. So he carried the message. And then we had a meeting the next day. And we straightened out the union problems, gave them all the locations in New York. If they make the movie, we get the world premiere in every major city. Again, it was about money. So I said, Joe, we could charge $200, $300 a ticket. This is in the 70s. We'd make, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars. That's why you went along with it. It's always about the fajouls. It's always about money.
You see, it's actually crazy. I mean, not just that part of the story, but the studio and not wanting to cast Al Pacino. Godfather went to so many trials. It's a miracle that that movie actually got even made, and not alone being one of the greatest films ever.
Well, even while and you're so right, because I mean, the studio would wanted Warren Beatty to play Michael. Are they crazy?
Yes, they're crazy.
Pacino is a genius, but nobody knew him. He did one movie called Panic in Needle Park. Coppola saw that movie, and he said, I want him. Coppola was ready to walk off the film. And at the last minute, they said they okayed him, and because Coppola didn't want me. I was not even an actor, but he couldn't say nothing to me. Then they had words. I don't know if you know the story with me and Brando. Brando and I had words. Brando was trying to get me fired. We had the first rehearsal. We had a rehearsal on 119th Street in New York. I knew it well. Patsy's up in Harlem. I used to bring overnight loans for the card games up there. 5,000, 10,000, they needed money. So we used to do overnight loans for them. So I was very familiar with Patsy's restaurant. And I get a thing saying to me to be at Patsy's at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for the first rehearsal for The Godfather. I loved it. So I went up early. I'm already wearing Brioni suits. I'm 26 years of age. I got a Chinese chick show for driving a Rolls Royce. And these guys are showing up in station wagons looking like garbage people. I mean, they were crazy. They didn't dress. They didn't do nothing. But I got there early. And everybody, even Fat Tony Salerno, said, what are you doing here so early? I said, I'm here for the rehearsal. It's for The Godfather's year. He said, you're not an actor. Everybody I said that I was in that movie didn't believe me because I never acted. So now we go to the rehearsal, and the whole cast is there. I never met anybody. And Coppola says to the audience, the cast, before we bring in Marlon Brando, don't approach him during the breaks. Don't talk to him. Don't have eye contact. Because all these young thespians who study, like Pacino and Jimmy Kahn, that was their, like their god. This guy was an actor's actor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So after 45 minutes, the first break, he came over to me. And he says, you're a big TV actor. I said, no. He said, you got a big movie coming out. I said, no. He said, well, you're not on Broadway. I said, you're right again. I said, wait, this is a quiz show. And he looked at me, because I ain't intimidated by nobody by this time. I already whacked three people. I'm going to worry about him. So, and then he said, well, he calls Coppola over right in front of me. And we got to rethink this guy. Because I never broke down the script of what I'm doing in the movie. I didn't even care. Like you said, nobody even thought the movie was going to come out. I just like being in the movie. So he said he undermines my family. He gets my oldest son killed. He lures Michael into this life I didn't want him to have. He says, Francis, you should think about this. So I'm saying to myself, this guy's trying to get me fired. So I don't know protocol on the set. I've never been on a set. So I dismissed the director. I said, Francis, go over there a minute. And he left. The whole room got quiet. They're saying, who is this guy? Because nobody knew me. Not only did I look at Brando, I put my arm on him. And I said, come with me. And I walked him to the back of the room. I didn't want to embarrass the guy. So I go nose to nose to him because I didn't want nobody here. I said, let me tell you something, Mr. Brando. Out of all due respect, I know who you are. But you get me fired. Listen to what I'm about to tell you. You get me fired, I will suck on your heart right here today, and you'll die. Oh, who the hell are you? He stepped back. He said, that was brilliant. You're a good actor. He thought I was acting. I meant it.
Oh, well, it worked out. We got the apocalypse now. And Godfather.
Yeah.
But isn't the Hollywood a bit of a mob itself, you know, because those people, you know, producers and directors, they are also kind of, you know, they know their ways.
Well, they know their ways, but, you know, don't ever think anything in this country that's so unionized, so controlled by the unions, is not controlled by the mob. Mickey Cohen, Johnny Rosselli, they organized Hollywood long ago, and that's who ran it. The mob runs major industry in America. That's no secret. All the unions, anything gets built in New York, every truck of concrete goes out, gets $3 a yard back to them. Nothing moves in this country without major organized crime. Anybody tries to tell you different? I mean, the street guys you hear about, they're all gone. And John Gotti's, all these guys, they destroyed it. But the old core, and the only reason they control it is because of the votes. The Democrats, the Republicans, they need the Teamsters. There's 37,000 members. They need the international longshoremen. That's why they go with it. It's been a way of life, period. Nobody, you all accept it, especially me.
Yeah. Listening to you speak, you use word Cosa Nostra, you use word mob, but you don't use word mafia so much. Does that maybe have some correlation with Joe Colombo and his agenda not to use mafia? Is that true that he didn't want the word mafia in Godfather?
No, Joe Colombo said that it was in the book, and he wanted that taken out, and they did it, and it's very funny you're saying that, because the scene in The Godfather, another word he wanted out was Guinea. He didn't like us being called Guineas.
Oh yeah.
So when I'm giving Connie a beating, I said, "You Guinea brat, now clean it up." Coppola cuts the scene. He said, "You can't say that." I said, why not? He said, Joe Colombo told us not to. I said, you just shot him. They shot him June 28, 1971. He was dead by the time I said it.
Yeah. Somebody didn't get the memo.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, and the in the casino, the Mo Green tells that to Michael.
Right.
When he, that was also a great scene. I have to ask, I mean, you called Al Pacino genius, as he obviously is, and
yeah.
I think one of the greatest scenes in anything is when he confronts your character, Carlo, after the murder. Obviously, he finds out, and he says, famously, you got to answer for Sonny, Carlo. What was Al Pacino at that time like? Because he seemed so intense. Did that intensity kind of correlate with real life? Was he just out of character
that's the kind of guy he was. He studied a lot of people. And I'll tell you why that scene works. I have to give credit where credit's due. Marlon Brando and I became really close. And when he was with Dick Smith, the guy who was his makeup man on every film, It took 3 hours to transpose Marlon Brando, who was 48 at the time, into the old man. And he told the assistant director, go get that kid, Russo. I want to talk to him. And everybody was like little bees outside his dresser, and they're all waiting to see him, whatever. He sent for me. And every day we would read lines. That's why I'm the only person in the world that could say Marlon Brando was my only acting teacher. Frank Sinatra was my only singing teacher. And at 15 and a half, I lost my virginity to Marilyn Monroe. All good teachers.
Which one is the best?
Well, Marilyn, obviously.
I want to ask you, when we corresponded, you mentioned that you are doing a documentary, if I'm correct, and you mentioned it previously, Frank Costello. Yeah. Is that correct? Now, Frank is obviously, you mentioned him, but he had a rather unique also history in the mob itself. And actually, I read recently that Bobby De Niro is going to play him in the film that comes out next year that Nicolas Pellegi wrote.
It's coming out this year, actually. It's coming out. November the 24th.
No, yeah, that would be interesting.
De Niro is playing. I'm close to Bobby. De Niro is playing Vito Genovese and Frank Costello, both characters.
Yeah, I read that. Yeah, and I was kind of he'll play them both like a dual role. I was surprised by that.
Well, you know, Bobby's very flexible, and with this AI now, with it, I mean, I don't agree with it. I don't know if you saw him in The Irishman. I mean, first of all, Scorsese is crazy with these 3 hour, 4 hour movies. Nobody wants to sit through them. But, you know, let him do what he's doing. He's Scorsese. He can do anything he wants. But no, he's doing him. But simultaneously, Fox came to me. Because I like I said, this is what he left me a lot of stuff. He died in 73. He left me this here with six more units in the same building. I rent them out. But I live in Midtown, New York. My block, you can't buy nothing on my block for under $12 million. Mm. So I'm here at 12 rooms. I mean, it's crazy. So Fox came to me because they heard about my relationship. And I don't know if you got it in your country, but did you see Get Gotti by Fox? It was a miniseries, Get Gotti on Netflix.
I know about it, but I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it. No, not.
Well, the same people who produced that now are doing a series of different mobsters. So they asked me to do Costello. They came here and shot the whole thing here. So we're coming out also in November. But we have the true story, and we got a Scorsese, another Fugazi story, like The Irishman. The Irishman, if you left it to him, he killed everybody in the world. He was one of the shooters at JFK, Tony. This guy's crazy.
Yeah, but to be fair to Marty, I mean, I know what you're saying, but I think he just wanted, from an artistic standpoint, to portray a life of a killer and, you know, how that affects him and people just through that story. So it was convenient, but I think it was more artistic, you know.
Well, endeavor. I would agree to you about one thing. Marty's very artistic, but don't ever sell him short of taking advantage of an era right now. The era in America is mob right now. They go through cycles. It's sci-fi, then it's Jurassic Park, then it's back to mob. Right now it's all mob. All the podcasts are mob. They got Sammy the Bull's got a mob. Everybody's got a mob podcast going now. The whole world was fascinated with mob years ago. I mean, Cagney, Bogart, they all made their careers early on before us in the 30s and 40s playing mobster. There's always been a fascination for mob. That's why my life will be continued forever. I hope I live to 100. I got more work than I ever got. I do motivational speaking now. Hmm. They want to put me in jail for life. Now I'm doing motivational speaking.
One or reverse.
No, I love it.
What do you know about Jimmy Hoffa? Do you know anything? You mentioned the Irishman, so.
Well, I knew about Jimmy a long time. And when he found God in prison and all that, I myself, if you go into the records, and they did a big story about me in the Review Journal, a newspaper out of Las Vegas, because I was building a hotel in 1980, a $72 million hotel. I was 40 years old. I just borrowed $32 million from the Teamsters pension fund myself on a napkin. I didn't fill out any credit thing. Now, he's coming out of jail, and Frank Fitzsimmons was running the Teamsters at that time. And he found God, another guy that found God. And he's trying to come out. Well, while he was going down the highway, I'm going to give you an exclusive story. He was in a burgundy Alexis Buick with a driver.
Okay.
A semi moving truck pulled in front of him, and they dropped their tailgate right on the highway as they're moving. And behind him, a tow truck came and pushed that car into the semi.
Wow.
They closed the door and filled it with carbon monoxide. Nobody ever saw Jimmy Hoffa again. I don't care what anybody said. The FBI gets a new lead, buried here, just for their budgets. Then 20 agents go, and they keep their job. Jimmy Hoffa was killed, and I know mob guys that bid on that car because they moved the engine block, they moved the axles, and they crushed it in a car crusher. And it came out to be a 2-foot by 4-foot square. Friends of mine bid it on it. One of my friends had it at his house. He's got a 4-foot by 10-foot glass on top of it. And he laughs about it. Let's go have a cigar with Alpha. And they go down the room and they smoke cigars. And Jimmy Alpha's there.
That's sick.
That's sick.
Yeah, but I don't want to be called up as a witness, so.
Yeah, I don't, hey, call me up. What do I know? I never give anybody up. I've been held in contempt of court so many times, forget about. I don't give nobody up. That's another reason. I have respect. You know? Yeah. And I'm lawyered up. I got lawyers they can't even hire. My lawyers cost more than their annual salaries. No, I've covered myself. That's why I talk for...
Yeah,
bite my cloudy.
Yeah.
So, talking about Bobby De Niro, he said about your book, Hollywood Godfather, he said, Gianni Russo walks the walk and talks the talk. What a life, worth to read. So if that's coming from De Niro, it is worth to read, right?
Oh, he knows. Bobby knows. Bobby's office is downtown, below Canal Street. My friends own everything downtown. Local street. Bobby's been around a lot of. I mean, don't you think he had to get permission to open all the Nobus throughout the world?
Money. Yeah, I think he opened Nobu here in Montenegro as well.
He's a very smart businessman. I don't know why he's doing what he's doing right now with Trump. Anybody that's in our business, in show business, I don't care if you're an actor, singer, whatever, don't get political. He's gotten so political against Trump that it's going to be a problem.
Because that's good advice.
Trump is going to get in, and then he's going to tell the IRS, investigate this guy, drive him crazy, and he's going to get crazy. He don't like Trump now. He's going to hate him when he gets in because he's winning. There's no question he ain't coming back.
Yeah, probably.
I'll be with Donald next weekend.
Oh, yeah. I think that's unfortunate with Hollywood. It's kind of, I mean, regardless of your political opinion, I mean, obviously it doesn't concern us since we're not Americans, but still, I mean, I don't care about politics in my entertainment. You know, it's entertainment.
I vote in Sicily every 5 years. And you don't know who the candidates are, believe me.
Yeah.
You also have a new book coming out, which you mentioned about the secrets of the mob. So mob what can secrets, we... Yeah. So what can we expect to see in it? Maybe a little hint?
No, I mean, I'll give you a lot of hints. No, I'm writing about it. I'm the statute of limitation, even with the Vatican. In Italy, it was 30 years I had to wait. But I'm talking about stuff now that I could talk about. And what are they going to do? Come get me? What are you going to do? How are you going to prove it? You got to get proof. I know what I'm doing. And fortunately, I know, this may sound very odd to your audience, anybody's audience. I never had handcuffs on. I never been locked up for any crimes. I've been tried on a lot of them. I had 23 federal indictments and 3 murder ones. Never put in jail because I lawyer up right away.
Like Carlos Gambino.
Carl, that's right, man. That's it. I learned from the masters. Maya Lansky, all these guys, they were the geniuses. All these young guys, John Gotti, look what Tony Spilotro did in Vegas. He destroyed it. Millions he destroyed. Mm-hmm. No, you keep your mouth shut and go to the bank. That's what I do.
Yeah.
I don't go to jail.
Yeah. But those guys are actually, they're probably the mob idols. I mean, the Carlo Gambino, Antonio Cardo, and guys like that. I mean, you do the
they
crime.
Were the old timers. They were the old timers, kept to themselves. You knew nothing about them. And even Ricardo. I mean, I liked the way Chicago was run because in New York we had 5 families. They had 5 different bosses, 5 different consigliere's. Chicago was one outfit, one guy. And then he had a street boss that he put out there, Sam Giancana. He took all the heat. Ricardo, you couldn't even get to this guy. I mean, I used to go to his house once a month for dinner. The dining room was two stories underground, so you couldn't even wire it, not alone get on his block. He knew every car there was that came in there. But they were the geniuses, and they amassed millions. I mean, I know everything about Frank Casella because I was that close to him. But when he died in 73, he owned buildings down on Wall Street. He's got buildings at $100 million today in trusts. Mm-hmm. They were smart. You know, mm-hmm. man, but these young kids are, I mean, they're crazy. They're on damn podcasts now talking on television. That's what, are they crazy? Skinny Nicky. They call me up. I wouldn't even talk to them. I want to be around you. What, are you crazy? You're going to be found in a trunk somewhere. But, you know, it's. They forget. And they're talking about, we took the oath, we did this, we did that. Well, you just disqualified yourself. They have the right. You're open. I mean, they got a bounty on their head. Right now, they're crazy.
Yeah. I mean, every podcast you were on, every show you spoke about Marilyn Monroe, about Frank Sinatra, about Costello and everybody. So that's why we didn't want so much accent on it, because you told us that stories. Is there a story you wish to tell about somebody, but you still haven't, from top of your head?
Well, I mean, the sensitivity, like even we talked about Marlon Brando. Nobody realized how hurt this guy was. Because we all know the glamour and whatever. But here's the guy, both his children committed suicide. Think about that. He lost grandchildren. I mean, it's crazy. That's the guy I know. That's the guy I sat with and talked to. He's a human being. He has feelings, mm-hmm. even like Sinatra. Sinatra was bipolar. I spent so much time with this guy. A lot of people never got to know that part of him. And you know, so I like the sensitivity of it. Even Marilyn. Marilyn had such a low esteem of herself that so many people took advantage of her and abused her because she thought all she had was her sex. And she gave it to everybody. I had arguments with Tony Curtis because he was with her. Sinatra was with her. Marlon Brando, everybody has been with this girl. And she was a friend. I mean, I was with her for a different reason because we had 2 parallels. I was in Bellevue at a quarantine hospital at 12 years of age. Her parents put her in an orphanage at 12. what we do, when we found that out about each other, that this was something, we both needed a hug. What it grew into was something else. But that's what I like about these people. These are the stories nobody tells about, because they're not glorified. But they're, there's sensitivity, like everybody else has it. We have pain. Why I'm successful is I overcame pain. I overcame 2,300 kids dying in front of me over the past 5 years in Bellevue. That gave me the goal to go out there. That's why I wrote my first book. The last sentence in my book is, yes, you can. I have no education. I'm an illiterate. I'm writing books. I can't spell. Thank God, spell check. But I mean, you know, it's like I'm sending you text messages. I press my microphone and I talk. That's
yeah. I think that this is the great wrap up for this episode from your behalf. And I see why you are getting into motivational talk right now. But before we completely wrap up this enjoyable conversation, we have a little tradition that we prepare a quote or verse or something on our language and we translate it to English. So you are going to be introduced to Montenegrin language with a quote Luka prepared for this episode.
I prepared a quote from our Montenegrin theater actor, famous, called Mirko Vlahović. And on first on our language, he said, jeste potreba svakog čovjeka da bude viđen, da on prvo treba da spozna samog sebe. Od karaktera tog istog čovjeka zavisi kako će se predstaviti svijetu. Dijelima ili fikcijom. Čovjekov karakter je njegova sudbina. And on English it would translate to, it is the need of every man to be seen, but he first needs to know himself. The character of that same man depends on how he will present himself to the world, through works or fiction. A man's character is his destiny.
That I totally believe in that. And to add to that, if you have a dream, you have an idea, pursue it, believe in it, but don't pick a dream or an objective that you want to achieve if you don't have the ability to do it. You have to really think about it. Don't do it with ego. Digest who you are and go do it. And don't tell anybody. See, most people go tell people what they're going to do. Then when they fail, they're known as a failure. But if you didn't tell anybody, nobody would know. On to the next one to make yourself a success. That's what I did.
That's a good advice.
Yeah. Mr. Russo, I hope you enjoyed this time with us, as we certainly did.
No, I'm going to keep your phone number. I may call you up. And let's go to lunch. I'm here.
Anytime. And we are here.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
You should visit Montenegro and see some real estate.
I would love it. No, I come with cash too.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you, and thank you, audience. I appreciate it.
We stay genuine, uncensored, and unscripted, and we always will, as we have to order our usual. Share us, subscribe us, and stay tuned until the next Wednesday.
Iguzo!